hear what I hear? Do you hear what I hear?
The boys, crinkling in the air.
The boys, they are a calling. It's a make a mix, folks, here on Let's Hear It for the Boys. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're going to be talking about the third episode of season one of The Boys, Get Some. Pete, you ready?
Get Some.
Pete, you ready to get some?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Justin, you ready to get some?
Oh, I already got some, but I want some more.
Oh, <it's> bragging.
So, this is the third episode here, as usual, on this show. If you haven't watched the episode, turn away, because we're going to spoil it. We know it came out a while ago, but hey, we're just getting caught up. It's all good. We're chatting through stuff. So we're going to give you a brief overview of the plot, and then we're going to talk through some of the major moments. You know, if you're listening to the podcast at home, feel free to chime in. Just start shouting stuff.
I know I do.
Well, and we'll probably hear it, right?
We'll hear it.
Through the magic of
true. If it's true, we'll hear it.
Right. If it wasn't true in your heart, we won't respond to it here. But if it is true in your heart and you shout it while you're listening to the podcast, we'll respond.
Every time a fan complains, an angel sighs a little bit.
Yeah, angel's like, oh, this fucking guy.
It's true.
So, lots of stuff going on in this episode. As we talked about the last episode, there was a bunch of stuff that was teased that pays off here, specifically the race between A-Train and Shockwave.
Yes.
But the big things that we're dealing with are Huey is still picking up from the death of Translucent. He killed Translucent, blew up his ass, not metaphorically, but literally, last episode.
I think both, metaphorically and literally.
I mean, he didn't blow up just his ass. It was all of him that blew up.
Yeah, but it started with the ass. It was from the ass up.
Yeah, it's an ass bomb.
It is. Yeah. It was literally an ass bomb, I guess, as opposed to figuratively an ass bomb, which I don't know what that is. So he's dealing with the death of Translucent. He's very thrown by that, but Butcher isn't stopping. He wants to move forward with their plan to take out the Supes. They want to know what Compound V is. So to do that, they end up tracking down Popclaw, who is A-Train's girlfriend, getting her in a compromising position by the end of the episode to get some blackmail over her. But in the process, Huey finds himself a little bit more of the team. We meet Mother's Milk, who's the next member of the team. We haven't met the whole team yet. We'll see them pretty soon. But this is the next one here, who's very different from Frenchie, very different from Butcher, but knew them back in the day. We get a little bit of bonding between Mother's Milk and Huey that goes on this episode. And then on the other side of the spectrum, on the Seven side, lots of stuff going on there. We find out Annie gets a new costume, which is very nice and nobody has any problems with.
Well,
no, it's like a sexy costume, and I do want to talk about that. Maybe we'll even start with that.
How can you, even just trying to recap, you still sound like a perv.
Thank you very much. Listen, sometimes people have sexy costumes. Doesn't make them perverted. It's just a thing, all right?
Yeah, but when an older dude is describing the costume and can't even, like, be nice about it, he's going to be like, it was a sexy costume.
I didn't say it like that, and you're older than me.
That's a good point. We're both old.
I wasn't just saying, you're the one. I said, oh, and it's like a sexier costume. That was the tone of voice I used.
And then you were
the one trying to imitate my voice, who is, I will point out once again, the older dude in this scenario said, it's a sexy costume. So I didn't actually say that. You said that. Like that. You were the one being creepy.
Let's rewind the tape and listen to it again, and we'll see
Is this a reverse pissing contest to see who's older and weirder?
Yeah.
Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah, it's a piss dribbling
contest?
Yeah,
I would just like to go one podcast where Zeldman can keep it together and not sound like a complete perv.
Okay, Pete, you recap. Explain what's going on with Starlight's costume in this episode.
All right, great. So basically what we saw was Starlight kind of stepped away from the corporation and tried to handle something on her own.
We're talking about the costume. We're talking about the costume, Pete.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Justin, I'm getting there.
I see. Oh, you're going back in your recap.
I'm going back to give you...
You're starting earlier. because you're revving it up. So, and I can see, the monkeys going in your head, trying to type out all the typewriters, figure out how to not say sexy costume and describe this plot line. So go ahead.
Would you let me fucking finish?
I would love to.
You're the one who said, why don't you recap it? So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, but now I'm doing what you do, which is lumping on you while you're trying to do the recap.
Guys, no more lumps. Pete has the floor.
So I appreciate what you're trying to do. So basically, she stepped out of line, and then I see your hand up. Wait for it, please. So she steps out of line. They say, you can't do things like that without us. You can't go out on your own. It was videotaped. It can get spun. And to punish her, to let her know that she can do whatever she wants, that she's a part of a corporation, part of a team, and they tell her what to do, she gets downgraded. Her costume gets downgraded to something that is not appropriate for someone to wear out in public.
Interesting. That's an interesting take.
So, just to check real quick, Pete. So you're saying that sort of outfit is not appropriate to wear in public? So you're saying that women shouldn't be allowed to wear whatever they want?
This is not a useful direction for anyone. Don't
even try.
When punishing Pete is something I believe in my heart. But I think you're both on odd sides of the spectrum. When what I think is happening here is totally unrelated to whatever Starlight's doing on her own. This is what their PR team wants to put Starlight, the character, in, because it is they're adding this sexual angle to this wholesome character that they have here, and they want to be able to develop her into a movie franchise. So they're trying to put what society thinks a hot woman would be wearing. And we don't have any time for questions, so let's move on to.
Well, what I would like to say is she's going into that room because she's in trouble. And the PR team is all fake. They are putting this spin on it, but it started because she is being punished for what she's done.
I do think we're brushing over the biggest point here that's going on in this particular scene, is that the two marketing dudes are named Seth and Evan, which are the two producers of the series. I don't think it's very specifically Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg or anything like that. It's obviously poking fun at them a little bit, but I love, like we talked about before, the parody aspects of course, this is what two nerds would want out of a superhero character.
Right.
Yeah. I would disagree.
Well, there are three of us on the podcast, Justin and I, two nerds agreed, and the third nerd disagreed, so I'm still correct.
Okay, I'm just saying that, like, you know what I mean? Like, if just because you're a nerdy guy doesn't mean you want the woman to be wearing, like, you know what I mean?
No, I know.
This is a perception issue. I also think for you to say it's not like they downgraded her to a costume that is worse. They weren't like, you're going to wear this worse costume. They're putting her in a position that is meant to be like a Miss Universe contestant, as opposed to this wholesome young woman who first showed up, who came out of like a very Christian Midwest lifestyle.
But because of her reaction, in her mind, it is a downgrade. She has a nice, comfortable outfit that she created, that she's very comfortable wearing, and then someone's making her wear something that isn't as appropriate.
Of course. I think we're all saying the same thing, but you just don't want to say the word sex, Pete, for some reason.
I don't have any problem saying the word sex. I'm just saying that, like, you know.
You just said, I don't have any problem saying the word kissing. That's what you just said.
You can't say the word sex. What do you think you said? Because you said, I don't have any problem saying the word. And then your head just exploded. Wow.
You were like the mask. You're like the wolf in Mask, the werewolf. Jim Carrey.
The main thing that I think that's so smart about the scene, beyond the cheeky thing of calling them Seth and Evan, is that the dialogue here is so precise to what goes on in comic book creation and superhero creation. It's Hollywood, clearly, like they're riffing off of that, but it goes down to what so many male creators say about female creators in comics, word for word. And we've talked about this a lot on a lot of different podcasts, but there's oftentimes you get a comic book TV show and the jokes are not precise. You know, they'll be like, I'm a nerd. I like Star Wars. And that's kind of where they end with. I say, yeah, as I'm wearing a Star Wars t-shirt right now. So really, really self-slamming. But it's very general jokes. This is such a specific joke of like male comic book creators being like, yeah, we created this character. She wears a skimpy costume because it empowers her. Don't you understand? This is really empowering the female side of her. And a lot of comic book fans nod and go, oh, okay, all right, that makes sense. That makes sense. But we clearly get to see here that, of course, that does not make sense. That's not what Starlight wants. That's not who she wants to be. And again, it's social commentary, but it's also very precise to the world that they're working in at the same time, which also is very laudable.
It's also very impractical.
I don't know about that.
If you're going to go to battle,
right,
you would want something that covers a little bit more to give you more protection.
You don't, I don't know. Anytime I got challenged to a fight, I showed up in a Speedo and I instantly won. Fight over, especially when I was covered with baby oil.
Yeah, no, you were the Oiler, right? Was your superhero name?
That was the Houston Oiler. That's where I fucked.
Well, that was
character was later adapted into the Watchmen,
right?
The TV show.
We did really touch on the last thing, and we'll certainly come back and talk more about Starlight in a second. But the last big thing that happens in the episode is we get a lot of the relationship between Homelander and Maeve in this episode as they go to fight crime. Homelander clearly wants to just like run away with Maeve. He wants to re-spark an old relationship they had. She doesn't want anything to do with him. We get more horrific sociopathic behavior from Homelander when he basically for fun kills a shooter with his bare hands, and then sets up a situation so that he can get away with it. And then the last little bit there is we find out exactly what happened to Translucent. He was in a box at the bottom of the ocean. Homelander finds him, and now they know that the boys are coming for them at the end of the episode.
Great ending to the episode.
Yeah, and again, fun music.
Yeah. So let's talk through it a little bit. Let's talk about some specific moments. Huey obviously is the star of the show. He's the main character. What did you think about his arc in this episode in particular?
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I really think that Huey is killing it as far as like as an actor. He has to pull off so much, especially in this episode where he's freaked out by kind of what he's done, and I'm very happy it picks right up after the ass bomb explosion. He's kind of washing off his face in the sink. Then he kind of goes and like loses it at home, has an interaction with his dad, and then is kind of like confessing to mother's milk, like, okay, this is like what happened. It kind of felt good. And then Mother's Milk kind of gives him a warning. And then he's got to go right into kind of like date mode and has this cute like second date with Starlight. And it's a lot to have one character go through in one episode. But I tell you, this guy is killing it as an actor.
Yeah. And I really love the way they sort of play it all. Like it's Huey having just his life has changed so much, and he killed Translucent. He took a moment, considered his action. It wasn't an accident, and then killed this soup at the end of last episode.
He also looked for the kind of like inspirational poster. And that kind of like pushed him over the edge a little bit. You know?
Well, but I think, yeah, I mean, it's hard though if you commit a crime or do something to blame a poster per se.
Well, sometimes if you have like a little cat poster and it's saying like, hang in there, and if you stare too long into the eyes, you know, they start to talk to you.
As you guys know, killed a bunch of people, and told the judge that I had that poster of Albert Einstein with his tongue sticking out, and the judge immediately said, case dismissed.
Yeah, that poster is dangerous, 100%.
It really is.
But wait, I do want to say, like, speaking of posters, he then goes home, and I think he has this moment where he's like, this was my life, this simpler life, believing in superheroes and all of that. And he smashes all of his shit because he knows that he can't ever go back to that. And that's why he then sort of vacillates the other direction with Mother's Milk and is like, I liked it. I want to do more killing. And he's like, hey, man, that's not good either. You need to find some middle ground here. And that's where why I think all of the storylines do sort of come together with the relationship developing between he and Starlight, because she is a stabilizing force for him. That's when he's with her, he's able to still maintain this sort of sweetness and the good qualities he had before he became who he is in The Boys, as well as being this person who is trying to change the world for the better.
I just wanted to jump back to the bedroom scene for a second, and this is not exactly a dumb comment, but something that, I think the show does very well and points to the fact that it's very well written, is a lesser show would have Huey go into his room. You'd see all the posters. You'd see the action figures or everything. Simon Pegg would come in and be like, Huey, what's wrong? And he'd be like, superheroes. I used to love them. Then they killed me. You know, and instead, you just visually get it. You understand emotionally what he's going through, and you don't need that speech to identify exactly what's going wrong or that journey is going on. What were you going to say, Pete?
Kind of along the lines of what you're saying, but more specifically what Justin is saying, it's a kid who's trying to graduate from pizza rolls to beer and nachos. And as we know, that's a tough leap. I mean, the real way to start off in life, I believe, is to start with mini pizza bagels. You know, and then try to evolve from there, although it's tough because that is the pinnacle of food.
So in your mind, mini pizza bagels are a step up from pizza rolls?
Yeah, I think we all know that. That's
more of
fact.
A teenage. So a child is pizza roll. Mm-hmm. Then you sort of graduate into pizza bagels. And then that's a simple step. You become an adult.
Yeah, I mean, if we
adult.
Really want to break it down, I think it starts, with the Flintstone vitamins, and then you graduate into
the original pizza. Go on.
Yeah, the McNuggets in the shape of dinosaurs, and then from there it's pizza rolls, and then hopefully that cocoon opens and that person becomes a butterfly and goes to mini pizza bagels.
That was the plot of Cocoon, right?
Yeah. Definitely. And so many coming of age movies really lean on this this philosophy that you have. This is the unhealthy person's guide to being a grown up.
I don't want to disagree with you, Pete, or anything. You're talking like Totino's pizza rolls, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this might just be me, and maybe it is. Maybe I'm going to be contradicting myself when I say this, but I bought some Totinos for my daughter the other day. We had them in the freezer.
Because you're a good father.
Because I'm the best father. She was like, I'm not going to eat those. I don't really like those. Because she's older now. She's pizza bagel age. And I was like, fine, somebody's got to eat them, you know, because they're going to be sitting here in the freezer. And I ate them, and like, it immediately brought me back very specifically to the pizza rolls that they used to have at Shea Stadium. Did you ever have those?
Wow.
Oh, my God. They were like pizza egg rolls, and they had little chunks of pepperoni in it. Best thing. So good. So I'm an adult. I'm a grown adult, as we've already established, far too old and obsessed with sex, right? Is that what's going on, Pete?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I enjoy a good pizza roll now and again. That's all I'm saying.
But don't you understand, Alex, the pizza rolls were, it's nostalgia. It was taking you back to a time when you were at Shea Stadium. So Pete's theory actually is holding a lot of water, or in this case, pizza sauce.
Zalbin, what you got to do is go out and get yourself some mini pizza bagels and then see what happens.
I never liked the mini pizza bagels.
I'm sorry. What did you just say?
Also, as far as your theory goes, Pete, it's weird that there's no actual pizza involved. It's all just like weird bastardizations of pizza.
There's no such thing.
I never liked pizza bagels. I never liked pizza bagels because like, you make them, and they're always like a little
what
too
did you eat in high school / college area time? Like, what were you doing?
What pizza. I ate pizza. I didn't have pizza bagels or rolls or any of these other little side journeys. I was in the main quest, which was for pizza.
I'll tell you, my
pizza and wings.
My quick
LP 50. LP 50 from Roma's in Clinton, New York. Large pizza, 50 wings. Boom.
Wow.
Matzo pizza is usually what I have. I like that. Take a little sauce, take a little cheese, put it on some matzah. Good stuff.
You
want to say something about my religion, Pete?
Oh my God, no. Why would I do that? I was I mean, in college, it was Rogan's Pizza, and they had to deal where it was like $10 for a medium pizza, 20 wings, and a drink.
Or an extra $10, and they'll switch it out for pizza bagels, right?
I wish.
Oh, man. That would be a good deal. That metaphor aside, we were talking about Huey. Let's talk about the date a little bit more, because I think this is another great scene in the episode. So in the middle of this heisty type thing where they're trying to break into A-Train's locker while he is in the midst of doing his big race, trying to prove himself, Frenchie is in the locker room about to break in, sort of doing the Mission Impossible thing. Starlight's about to go into the locker room, and instead Huey's like, hey, you want to grab a beer and some nachos? Let's go do it. And they have this very cute scene there. I love the relationship, and yes, I love him also just turning off the radio so Butcher can't hear them in the middle of it, which obviously is a little bit of a mistake in terms of his burner shooting race than there, but it really doubles down on the fact that what he is feeling and for her and with her is real.
Well, I like the way that he, in these moments, he vacillates between saying to her, like, come get a beer with me. This helps the plan that my group is doing.
Yeah.
And then when he gets to be with her, then he's like, I'm going to turn off my radio because now I'm with her and I care for her. So, like, he is feeling both at the same time.
Yeah. And it's also, like, because he is a little bit more of a nerdy, unsure dude, like, he almost needs that push of Butcher being like, hey, we need her. Like, talk to her, distract her. We need a little distraction here. So he kind of needed that push to talk to her. And then what he said was, do you want to go get an overpriced beer? And then she adorably said, if you throw in some overpriced nachos. And then that brings us to the nice romantic beer and nachos date, which was fantastic. But then we get a cut to the race, and Mother's Milk looks down at his phone, and then he gives the, you know, line that we all know from Good Will Hunting, I gotta go see about a girl. So they are really playing that whole rom-com. That was lovely.
And Pete, as a huge rom-com fan, and
Williams quote.
Nice, good. And a man who believes that the best date possible is overpriced beer and overpriced nachos. You are the expert here, so we, as always, defer to you.
I mean, not the best, but definitely up there. And a little beer and nachos, I mean, that's romantic.
With your current girlfriend, on your first date, you took her out for regular priced nachos and beer and then insisted on paying double, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
This also does end with a very cute line at the end of it where he asks her out on a real date. And I believe he says, should I call you or commit a crime? Very cute. Very across the board.
And then she jokingly yes-anded that bit and was like, it would be easier to get a hold of me if you committed a crime.
Yeah, they're just very cute together. And I think it's very different from the comic where Huey is Simon Pegg. He's shy. Yeah. He's nebbishy across the board. But here it's Jack Quaid, who is more of the charming romantic comedy lead. So for them to lean into that, I think is a very smart choice. Go ahead.
Another thing I want to talk about real quick is I love the way this show, the sort of ESPN style package that opens up a lot of this A-Train versus Shockwave stuff. And the way all of this is handled is so good. Like it's an expensive things they do on this show that are only there to serve the world building. And this show just does a great job across the board of making everything feel real. And it feels like a small gesture, but it actually makes all of the satire they're doing about our modern culture really resonate much more because it feels so real.
The other thing that I think really works about the A-Train storyline, and if you haven't watched the episode in a while and don't remember, so he has to win this race or he is going to be out of the seven. Obviously, he's the guy who ran through Huey's girlfriend in the first episode, but I remember very clearly this was the episode where I realized, oh, this show is very good. And the reason I think it's very good is because this horrific character who essentially should be the maniacal villain in any other show, you feel for him by the end of this episode. Like he fucks up so many times, but at the same time, him like, I'm going to lose my job. They're going to get rid of me. I'll have nothing in my life. he uses this compound V. He's clearly drugged up. That's bad. He's hurting his relationship with Constantine's boyfriend, who's his brother, and hurting his relationship with his girlfriend, Popclaw, and everything else. Well, like, there's so much going on in this episode at the same time that gets you into emotionally in his life, when two episodes prior, he was the worst human being alive.
Well, and I feel like this really maps so well. When most of this show is about, like, celebrity culture and sort of the problems associated with that on both sides, this episode feels specifically about athlete culture, like professional athletes. And that's why I think why we feel for A-Train. Like, he's someone who's trying to just maintain his lifestyle that he got to. And I think the Compound V in this episode specifically maps with steroid use and all of that. So he feels like he has to use it to keep his life going, even despite the fact that it's fucking up. He killed someone. It's fucking up his life across the board. Just a way to pivot the metaphor of the show, like, in just this episode alone, I think it's really hard to do.
Well, I think that you guys feel for A-Train. I sure as shit don't, because you see that he is lying to his quote-unquote girlfriend. She thinks that he is doing all these things for them. He, it seems like, is very much using her and is never going to give her the recognition that that she is looking for, or the kind of validation that she needs. And he's just running from his problems
very quickly.
He's got to really start kind of taking responsibility for himself and his actions. As she pointed out to him, you ran through a girl, you know, so.
Well, and what I like about, though, their relationship is, yes, he's using her, but also she's using him. She wants to get back into the public eye. She wants to be his girlfriend, so that cameras, she'll be famous again.
She seems more generally interested in their relationship. And then, yes, she would like to get back in because they are dating. And I don't think she is, like, really using him. It seems like she's more about the love.
Maybe, but let me throw this to you. It's hard to feel too much sympathy for her when later in the episode, she takes a bunch of Compound V and straight up kills a dude.
Right. Yeah. With her thighs.
Yeah. With her thighs.
Well, yeah, but it's not on purpose. You can tell by the look of horror, you know, she was just trying to, you know, have a good sexual experience. And then
but accidentally saying that as an
murders
older dude.
Somebody and squeezes their head out through the top
it's
of
weird
head.
Because I don't know if you know this, but what you just said is, like, she was just trying to have a good kissing experience.
All I heard was she's trying to have a good and then your head turned into that.
God, I really don't want to ever hear you make that weird noise again.
You're the one who made that weird noise.
But I do think, like, I think you can feel sympathy for all of these characters, despite the bad choices they've made. We're watching them make these mistakes, and they do feel like, especially Popclaw, it does feel like she has some good in her. She's someone who wants to, like, do better with her life, but she's caught in these circumstances that are just not working for her. And then it ends up that she kills this person, then has to betray the A-Train, who, whether she loves him or not, she, like, is in a relationship she wants to continue with for the sake of the boys getting their information. And the boys aren't being super heroic here. They are blackmailing this person who's in a terrible circumstance.
Well, and Butcher lets the landlord die in this situation. The thing that I want to kind of step back and, or rather pivot off that a little bit, is I think one of the major themes of the episode that I took away is everybody is afraid of something or somebody. And that, again, is I think why you get into A-Train's head, because he's scared of losing this fame. Popclaw is exactly the same way. Maeve isn't exactly scared of the Homelander, but she's certainly frustrated at him, but can't say anything because he would kill her. But even Homelander, and I think this is such a smart decision, you get that great scene where Stillwell is with her baby in the office, running around, the baby's screaming and crying, and she's telling Homelander he needs to give this speech, and he's like, come on, I'm Homelander. I'm American personified. I don't need a speech. And she says, Mr. Edgar wrote it personally. We don't know who Mr. Edgar is, but he stops and just grabs the speech without a word. Even Homelander, the most powerful character in the show that we've met so far, answers to somebody and is scared of something, and that's such a great decision.
He's also kind of scared of babies.
Yes. He hates that. Well, he hates that baby specifically.
That is the funniest shot of the episode. Him looking at the baby and the baby staring back at him. Great stuff.
That fucking baby was eyeballing Homelander. Mm-hmm. Wasn't just goo goo gaga. That baby was like, I will fuck you up, Homelander.
Yeah, it's true. That was the baby's first words.
Yeah. I mean, same with me.
Where they got that baby, but that's one of the best baby acting jobs I've ever seen in my life.
It's actually a 14-year-old man.
Oh, that makes sense.
Thank you for saying it was a man, because, of course, that baby has been bar mitzvahed.
Well, yeah, he's been bar mitzvahed, and he's eating pizza bagels. So
you can tell.
That's a fucking man.
Let's talk about Mother's Milk, because that's obviously the big new character that's introduced this episode. He is a little different than he is in the comic books, but I love his intro. He's working in prison at a very violent ping pong tournament. And then his relationship with Huey, as we've touched on as well, just gives the show a very different layer. Like they do, I know we keep lauding everything, but they do a very good job of immediately setting up his relationships with everybody on the show so far, how they're going to be different. He has a relationship with Butcher where he doesn't like them, but is very into killing soups with him. Really doesn't like Frenchie, but they get over that. Clearly bonds with Huey as the new guy. Great stuff. I enjoyed him. What'd you guys think of him?
Well, I really liked how he was introduced. You know, he's a rules guy. He's an order guy. He likes things arranged on his desk. You got to respect the rules of Pong. Really cool. But also, what's great about this is they tell so much. Like, Butcher got Frenchie involved because he gave too much information. Mother's Milk was like, don't say another thing. Like, he's already fallen for that once. Butcher is just running scams on all the people he knows. He is really kind of this driving force for what we think may be good, but also seems very evil. And I liked how Mother's Milk was very, very on to him and, like, wouldn't let him be conned until Butcher was kind of like, guess what? We killed the soup. And that was like too much for him. But also the Rick Roll ringtone was really hysterical.
Mm-hmm. What I like about Mother's Milk is he's the heart of the team. And it feels like the team across the board are all like aspects of Huey, our main character, I feel like, where you have Butcher is his desire for revenge, sort of pure and simple. And that's what they identify each other. Mother's Milk is his heart, someone who's like, hey, man, be cool. You can have a life without this. And Frenchie's sort of the cold, analytical, I will solve this problem without the moral background. Like, that's why he blows up Translucent, because of the sort of the Frenchie in him. And so having Mother's Milk, it really gives a grounding to all this team and makes them really people you can watch and root for, I think. It'd be hard to root for Butcher and Frenchie just fucking everything up, and he would be like, what's happening?
Yeah. A couple of other quick little bits that I wanted to call out that I liked in particular in this episode. For the big race, there's all this buildup for it, crowds, sponsorship, and everything. And then, of course, it's a super speed race, so it's done in under a second, which I thought is just such a funny, smart detail. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I really liked quite a bit that's, again, like a very specific comic joke, and it's been done a million times, but I think they did it really well. At the end of the episode, when the Deep is revealing that he has the case that Translucent is in, he very casually throws out, he says, well, I talked to a friend of mine, and Homelander breaks it, is like, it was a fucking porpoise.
Again, with the, you know, good stuff. Doing the dolphin fucking joke.
Yeah. I mean, anytime, the Aquaman jokes are great. They work really well here because, the Deep is such a, like, dick. Like, he's so, he's trying so hard to be something that he's not. And so all of those jokes undercut him in just the right way.
And it's speaking of kind of like tropes at work, Homelander kind of shows up late to the race a little bit and does his superhero landing. And we get another taste of like how two-faced Homelander is when he's in the crowd, where he's being super nice and you are the real heroes here and all the kind of like talk that's scripted, and then like kind of whispers to his mouth, you fucking assholes, as he's like waving to them.
Yeah. Well, another thing I wanted to hit is I think connecting Huey and Butcher in this episode, you have the moment where A-Train shows up at the place when Huey and Mother's Milk are undercover as the tech guys, and Huey challenges him. He's like, he thinks he's going to recognize him. A-Train doesn't recognize him, and he stands there and like tries to be recognized by him to have the confrontation. And Butcher, in which great scene, Butcher in very much the same way during the race, Homelander's there like 50 feet from him, and the whole crowd is cheering for the race, and he's the only one turned, making hard eye contact with Homelander, challenging him like in the same way. And it even
makes Homelander uneasy. Like, both of these people are trying to fuck up their plan. Like, Butcher can't keep it together, and neither can Huey. I mean, Huey had that moment of panic in the hallway, but then it's like, don't we know each other? And Mother's Milk, like, what are you? Are you trying to get us killed? And, like, walks him out of there, saves the day.
Well, they're willing to sacrifice everything for the revenge they have.
Well, I do think it's two slightly different things. I think for Butcher, the thing is he's selling it as this great crusade against the evil superheroes, but really for him, it's personal. We haven't learned exactly yet in the show what it's all about. We do find out later on, though there's been hints of it. He will sacrifice absolutely everything to get at Homelander. That's basically what's happening with him. With Huey, I think the thing that's happening in that scene that's so smart is he runs into A-Train. He's immediately terrified because he's like, oh shit, this is going to fuck up the plan. And when A-Train doesn't recognize him, that's even worse. Because,
yeah, it makes him angry.
Yeah, because that's how little killing Huey's girlfriend meant to A-Train. He doesn't remember him. He doesn't remember her. It's just another thing that happened in his superhero life. And I think that's why he challenges him, is he's like, fuck you. Fuck you for forgetting who I am. Remember who I am. Get angry about it. Kill me. That'll prove that this actually meant something to you the way that it meant to me.
And what's interesting is, like, when we kind of meet Mother's Milk, he knows about more about Butcher, and we kind of get, like, he's like, is this about Becca for you? Is this about, and, like, we get some names, and then also Mother's Milk talks about Monique, I believe it is, or Monica, who is his girlfriend, and how they are back together, and how he's working hard on that relationship. And there's a fun when we get the Rickroll ringtone, the way he talks to his girlfriend, people make fun of him for. But it's also very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other final points about this episode? Other things that you dudes wanted to bring up?
Another great episode in this show that is able to do so much at the same time. That's what I think is the most amazing part about it across the board.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about is, I really liked how Mother's Milk was like, fine, but I'm not working with Frenchie. And Butcher was like, I haven't seen him in years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, oh, just it says so much.
Good bits. Good bits throughout. Yeah. Let's talk about our best boy of the episode, though. Who was the best boy? Pete, you want to kick it off?
Oh, I'm going to have to say Huey, just because of all he went through. It's just really impressive to see the range of this main character and the fact of all the emotions that he's pulling off at once and everything that's happening so fast. I really like how he lost it in his room. That was really powerful, as you mentioned, Zelbs, the show Don't Tell. But one thing I wanted to say as well is, like, it's real fun to kind of, like, the first time I watched this, I was like, who's bad? Like, it seems like everybody's kind of bad. So it's like this real interesting, like, who's the worst as these kind of like episodes unfold. It's not like a clear line in the sand of what's what. And, I think Starlight said it where she was like, you know, once you kind of see behind the curtain, you can't go back.
Yeah. What about you, Justin? Best boy of the episode?
I mean, I got to give it up for the most most heroic character and just a concerned citizen, the porpoise that reported the the chest that sunk there. He's like, hey, I should go talk to the deep. He's often on land, but
he actually does it professionally. He's a reporter.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think he works for Squeak, Squeak, Squeak Weekly. Squeak, Squeak, Squeakly.
Gosh, I hope someday I'm over a porper for a Squeak, Squeak, Squeakly.
It's the Time magazine of the underwater.
It is. Kind of fallen to the wayside a little bit at the bar.
It used to have more prestige, and exactly. Now it's a little bit more like entertainment, Squeakly.
But it's a job. But
let me also give it up for...
Did you know that they're coming out squently now?
Oh, my God.
It's crazy. I accidentally squeak-scribed to Entertainment Squeakly, and they just keep sending the issues, even though it squeak-spired over a year ago.
Yeah, you got to cancel your prescription.
I'm going to shoot myself. Okay.
Pete is just... wondering what the purpose of this whole conversation is.
Just when I think we're all, please stop, for the love of God.
Let me give it up for Mother's Milk, though, as my best boy. Like I said it earlier, the true grounding center of the team, someone that keeps the boys from wobbling off into becoming like straight up villains in their own right. And it's great to have him in the show.
You know what? I got to give it up for A-Train this episode. I know, Pete, he's reprehensible. He's a villain. If he died the next episode, that'd be absolutely fine. But I'm just so impressed on the journey they took him on in this episode, how much you get to see inside of his head and what he's going through in his life and how they flesh that out. And like I said, I think you still want the Seven to die. You want the boys to win and take them down. But the fact that we get a twinge of sympathy for this character in this episode is so impressive and so nice to see.
I tell you, that goddamn baby should get the best boy. That was a hell of an actor.
Best yes. baby.
You should have picked that, but it's too late. You already picked the thing that you picked. Sorry about that, buddy.
Sorry. Yeah,
you
don't
even remember. You just said the thing that you picked.
Yeah, you picked the thing you picked. I don't remember. That was a while ago. We had a whole discussion about porpoises in the middle there. Yeah. That's exactly. Where my brain's at. All right, before we wrap up here, a couple of things to plug. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We love to chat with you about the boys. Socially, you can check us out at Hear It For The Boys with the number 4 on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Yeah.
Also, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And hey, Merry Christmas from me and the rest of the boys.
It's true. With seasonal podcast.
What the fuck?
I did a whole thing about remember you at the hear beginning? When I hear back at the beginning. It was a callback.
Okay, yeah. Oh, that was a while ago. I don't remember that. We talked about porpoises.
Squeak, squeak, baby.